The greatest song of all time is Eddie Murphy's Party All the Time.
I don't even know what that is. Is that an actual song? Oh, I gotta check that out.
He did a whole video where he bought primetime air on Fox really? In 1990, God knows how long ago, 8 o'clock in the evening to do his music video Party All the Time. I don't need to hear.
Oh my God, this is awesome. This is excellent intro music.
Girls got to know how to party all the time. Party all the time. Party all the time. Yes.
It's awesome. I don't know. I totally forgotten that song.
Party all the time.
I totally forgotten that song.
Anyway, it's a late recording day again, so we're, let's say, tired, not drunk, and so it's going to be one of those.
Maybe we should start drinking.
Maybe we should. Way ahead of you.
No, are you really?
No. Nice. I buy one case of beer, and it's in the fridge for 3 years. I have to pour it out.
I've been into the – I mean, I hardly ever drink, but when I do lately – hard cider, kind of into the hard cider. Although just like one bottle of it, and I'm drunk.
I like the classics. I like gin and tonic.
Yeah, I've had a gin and tonic, like not much anymore, but I've had one here and there back in the day.
I just go off of the popular media.
My brother is big on
Earl Grey tea and White Russians.
I occasionally do a scotch. But that's kind of you got to really be in the right mindset for that. Ugh. I don't have that much time to relax. It's like you got to really be in a relaxation kind of state to have that, and I'm never in that state anymore. So,
all right, Uberdeck was released second again. Version or whatever yesterday again. Nice. Yeah, well, no, just an update, but major rewrite of all pretty right. much everything. So. Push notifications, and rich push notifications. So the terminology changed because I introduced something that needed everything to be changed for. So it's now push notifications and rich push notifications. And
hold on. I already have a question. So I never use these things, right? But push notification is that thing where, like, on your home screen, it's going to pop up, right, and give a little bar, and the app's going to say.
All right. So push notification is the stuff that technically speaking, Apple pushes to your device. So there's nothing polling or long polling or anything or requesting anything from a server. So once you send one of those. Basically, you construct one of those things at Uberdeck, and Uberdeck tells Apple, please send this push notification to these 12 million devices, and Apple does it, right? So your app doesn't have to be running, it just does it in the background. So
now you don't have to make to like 12 million calls, right? Like you just say, call everyone who has my app.
No, you do.
You have to make 12 million calls?
Well, it depends on how you optimize it, but. From Apple's perspective, you have to make each individual call, yeah, because you specify the device token, which is the individual device.
Now, I thought you didn't have that much information. You actually can get a list of all the installed devices?
The Uberdeck library registers the device when you start the app with Uberdeck.
So anybody who does these, like when you have like you know games with push notifications or whatever, like when you say, okay, turn on the push notification – they have to log your device ID or whatever back behind the scenes. You know,
they register with Apple. Apple gives them a device token, and then they send the device token to their server or to a service like Uberdeck or Urban Airship or whoever does their push stuff for them. Yeah,
that's weird. You would think that Apple would just say, "Make this one call, and then we'll just send it to everybody." And the device can then, like, if the device doesn't have it on or whatever, it won't, you know, obviously show anything. But
Apple has been strangely. Minimalistic with this. I mean, they provide a way to, and it's a binary stream. So it's not even SOAP. It's not SOAP. It's not JSON. It's not XML. It's not an HTTP post call. It's bits flying through. I mean, you have to pack that stuff and make sure like the endianness is correct. It's like really. back from the early, my early days, of course, like mid-90s coding. So you send those off, and Apple takes them out and out of your stream and sends them to those devices. Not guaranteed, by the way. It's kind of like best effort.
Right.
Because once you get down to like Indianness and bit streaming, everything is like best effort at that level. And
that's crazy. That's insane.
And then Apple kind of gives you a second service where you could, where it tells you that, you know, certain devices are not valid anymore, so you don't have to keep resending to like dead endpoints. Mm. And Android does things differently, but you know, Uber takes care of all that for you.
Now on Android, is it better or it's kind of just
different? It's just different. It's just different.
But you still have to make the 12 million calls or whatever, however many calls you need to make.
Yeah, it's just a different. I mean, the concept is the same. It's just push, right? Push means there's a proxy server somewhere doing the pushing. So whether it's Google or it's Apple, somebody has to tell Google or Apple to send to some device. So you could send one device or you could send a million devices. And if you want to keep a simple interface, then the interface is just sent to one device and you just call it a million times.
I assume they have some kind of batch, like you can send a bunch of IDs with one message or something.
You could do things on Google that are easy. I don't even remember anymore. I'm so like the technicals of this I implemented way early. Yeah. And this has been like a million days worth of coding in a row. And most of it has just been like making the interface smooth for the end users and making the integration easy. Because Apple didn't make it easy even to register. Because you got to do part registration on their side and part registration on whoever's sending your push stuff for you. And Google also, you have to open up a Google API key and then do stuff on your server with that key. So it's like a hassle. This is why we originally just did rich push. So we didn't rely with UberDeck on any of the vendor stuff, any of the Apple or the Google stuff, so that you could just send notifications without worrying about that stuff. But we wanted push, so now we have both push and rich push. So rich push is different. Rich push is not push. It's more direct client server type of a thing. So your app requests the campaign. And That's the original what I did. But most people add that later, and we added that first. Right. And so push notifications are limited to, at least in Apple's case, 256, 255 bytes, something like that. Right. And so that's everything. It goes out as a packed JSON. And so a bunch of that is just a boilerplate that Apple requires in terms of keys and, you know, parentheses and squiggle lines and all that. So you could add on a badge to overlay a number on top of your application icon. Or you could send a sound. So every little bit that you want to be part of your push notification takes away from the bytes that you're allowed to send. So you're allowed to send a fairly small payload. But we also added custom payload data to our push notification. So if you have some room and you wanted to say, for example, send this message to this user, play a sound, and when they click on that message, my app opens, but I also want to send some additional custom data to my app, like behind the scenes type of a thing. Right. For example, to tell it to check the server or show the user a custom message. You could do that with UberDeck, right? You could say, send this message that the user will see, but also send a little bit, a few pieces of information to my own app so I could deal with it when on the apps and when it opens up. So we do that both on Android and iOS. And then we also have the rich push, which has no limitations. You can send full blown images and full like books of text if you want.
Right.
So we got those things covered, and cool. That's a lot of work, but it seems to be going all right. We changed the pricing now. It's $15 a month for all you can push. Nice. Type of a deal. So unlimited push, unlimited rich push, unlimited apps, unlimited recipients. We even integrate it for you if you need help with integration.
Ah, getting all services.
Servicey. Concierge.
Concierge. Very nice. Right. So is that new? Has anybody actually taken you up on that yet? Because you just released this yesterday or something, right?
Yeah, I just released it yesterday evening. Today I'm playing DevOps with the servers.
Nice.
Trying to... You know what's worse than doing marketing all day? Learning to do marketing all day. because you kind of you already feel useless after spending so much time just writing code, and then you're like sitting there and you have to do you don't have any more code to write. But then you kind of want to do marketing, but you don't know anything about it. And then you go off and you listen to a bunch of things and you read a bunch of things. So they tell you, okay, so SEO is the long-hanging fruit. And then you try to figure out what the hell SEO means. And then you go and you search for a bunch of SEO articles. And then you spend two hours doing that, and it turns out the stuff you read from 2012 was like no longer valid because Google changes their shit every 2 months. So then you kind of have to – is there a Stack Overflow for SEO that keeps the articles current at least you don't waste your time reading stuff?
That Moz is pretty big. I think you could look at Moz.
Isn't that like $200 a month or something?
Yeah, it might be something. I mean, they have a lot of free stuff up too, I think. But there is something to that.
So you kind of feel like a child running this business that's been around for so long but not knowing what to do with it. But it's all right. I mean, also part of it feels kind of icky. Like, I want to do marketing, but a lot of it is sort of like maybe it works, but like I wouldn't want it if I received it type of a thing. Yeah. Not even spam, but like long copy and just a bunch of things like that. So you wind up kind of reading about stuff that you don't even enjoy the topic of it, right? And you wind up having to do it. So in the end, I did a bunch of things. What did I do? Look, I'm writing down these things just for you.
Yeah, let's get the list going here.
So I put up a blog post about the push notification stuff. I sent out a campaign monitor newsletter. There's a couple of hundred people on the UberDeck list now. Mm-hmm. I moved the blog from Tumblr to a local WordPress installation because Tumblr is annoying me now. Yeah. That's not really marketing, but right. I'm just going down the list. What else did I do? Kyle Yamamoto from Mochi Bits. He's kind of a listener to both this show and I think to What Now when I was recording that with Gavin. And those guys at Mochi Bits, they're running a game dev studio for iOS and Android games. So they're releasing a new game soon called Word Gobble, which is a word game. I suck at word games. You know those word games where you have to like find enough, like Scrabble, you have to find enough letters to form a word, and longer the word, the more points you get. All I do is like find cat all day. Shoe and cat. Shoe is like my longest word. So they sent me the game to test, and because I hit him up on Twitter and I said, do you want to do some sort of a cross promotion with UberDeck? And he's like, sure, what do you have in mind? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. It just seemed like, he's saying, we're releasing this game. Does anybody want to do any like cross promotional type of a thing? Right. And UberDeck is sort of like in a position where the only time people sign up for UberDeck is like when they're updating something or releasing something new. Right. So I thought, it seems like my gut feeling is it's the right thing to do, is doing some sort of a cross promotion with him. But I've never, I don't do this stuff. I have no idea. Like Patrick McKenzie would like follow all the avenues already and like lay it out like a plan, and I have no idea what I'm doing. So,
well, is he using UberDeck in the
new, he's a customer release? Already.
Okay, yeah. So that's good. Well, I mean, the main thing too, like early, what's nice is like, I just did the first one of these for Snappy, the first like real case study, mm-hmm. one of our early customers.
That's what it is, case study. Let me write that down, case.
Yeah.
I was trying questions. To remember what it's called, my customer interview. That doesn't sound like case study. Yeah.
So we got the customer is called Slide Room, actually, and they were beta users and using it for a long time. And so they did a case study for us and, just said how it's helped them and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's really good to get a few of those under your belt, and so you can, start to show people that people are actually using your service, mm-hmm. In the real world for real things and liking it and all that. So, yeah, I mean, just that alone, that he's using it and hopefully, would be willing to share his experience, once he's used it for a month or two or whatever, then I mean, that alone is worth it, but...
Yeah, so I don't know if it's properly called cross-promotion or not, but we're going to do some sort of like an interview with him for the UberDeck blog. And then six months down the line or something, we're going to do a follow-up to see where the game is and, you know, what lessons they have for anything. So mainly my content marketing, quote-unquote, type of thing is to try to find as much useful crap for mobile developers as I can, put it up on a blog. I don't know if that's the right strategy, but it seems to be the...
I think so. I mean, because UberDeck is so broad. I mean, it really applies to every mobile app. So, you know, I think something, you know, maybe find a few niches you kind of settle into a little more. But I would think that you'd be able to do some stuff there. Yeah. And maybe we'll have him on and we can talk shop on here too.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. Because we're going to dip our toe into the iOS water. Taylor is going to start taking a look at that, and we're going to use UberDeck, obviously.
Yay!
So we'll be another customer, but I don't know. We'll see. You know, we haven't done anything yet, but you know, Snappy. I feel like if we do like an awesome iOS app, that it could be the best way to use Snappy, because Snappy is so simple and it's kind of core to how it works that it's optimal for a mobile kind of setup. You know, in a way that something like HelpSpot isn't, you know, it's just way more complicated.
It's funny how our apps, the next one, Quintu and Snappy, we're totally not like collaborating on our strategy of what we're doing, but the decisions are going into parallel, because like the whole point of Quintu, which is sort of like doing a subset of what Snappy is doing now, right, is that I said initially, this is just going to be used from mobile devices. I'm not even sure I'm going to do a web interface for this. But then you got to kind of have a web interface, because it'll be like weird without one. Right. But like the whole point is to have it just be mobile access. And so now you're thinking that maybe Snappy should be like, that's the primary access.
Yeah, and I think like, I mean, I don't know if that would ever be like the primary usage of Snappy, but I think for a certain group of people, it would be, right? And then even if it's not the primary usage for this, for everybody else, I think it could be the kind of thing where when they use it, they're like, holy crap, this is awesome. Like, because I can just go in here insanely fast. And other than the, you know, it's kind of crappy typing on your mobile device, you know, but some people really like it. And if you have a keyboard hooked up to it, it's, you know, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But you know, they're not a custom field. It's not a whole bunch of complexity. So it's going to be able to just be real, real streamlined, I think. And, so anyway, so that'll be – I think we'll have some interesting stuff as that gets rolling. And we'll have, our worlds will be crossing, and that'll make for good show topics, I'm guessing.
You're doing native. You're not even debating us to web or native.
We already debated this, but I'm still on the native, because
– No, not between us. I mean Userscape internally.
Internally, yeah. We are not, I think everybody's kind of bored with the native. I mean, we had kicked around the HTML one, but you know, part of me is like, Snappy's whole front end is complicated JavaScript, and that stuff, it's a real kind of bear to just deal with and maintain. And I don't know, getting into all that for the mobile thing, I think isn't really much less work. Now, obviously, you get the upside of, you know, it then theoretically works across all these different devices, although I have my doubts about that in practice as well. And so then you get into weird testing, a lot of bugs. I don't know. I feel like it's simpler. It just works on iOS. It just is like iOS 7 plus, and we just keep it real simple, you know, early. And then I figure we could always do something, you know, if we have to bring it to Android, I don't know if I'd have as much interest in us doing that ourselves. Like maybe we outsource that or whatever, if there's demand at some point. But I don't know. And the other thing about it too is I kind of feel like we're big enough now that we should have at least somebody who knows some native mobile stuff, just because, you know, everything's going mobile. And so
doesn't have enough shit in his life right now.
You know what's funny is he was just on a podcast the other night, this PHP Town Hall podcast, and they live stream it. So they actually do it on like Google Hangouts or whatever, something like that. YouTube, and I was just watching it live as he was on there with some other people, and he was saying how they asked him something about JavaScript, and he's like, "No, I haven't done anything but PHP in like the last 2 years," and I was like, "And this is before me and him had, you know, fleshed it out a little bit more," And so, yeah, I think it'd be good for him to get out of pure PHP land, you know, because, you know, that's what happened. He was working on ASP and COBOL and crazy stuff like that and just started messing around with PHP on the side. And that's when he kind of came up with Laravel. So you never know. Maybe he'll revolutionize the iOS development world.
You're gonna dilute his powers, man. He groks PHP. He's at the atom level.
You're gonna throw
Objective-C at him. You're just gonna weaken the strength.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, I have no doubt he'll do fine.
But it will be mostly on him. So I don't think both guys will be in there. I mean, maybe Eric will help out a little bit, but he'll kind of be holding down the snappy ship while Taylor's off on that end of learning that. So
cool.
Be kind of on him to take it on. But again, like, since it's pretty simple and we'll keep it simple, so should be interesting. I mean, we'll learn some stuff if nothing else. And you know, it is ancillary to the main app, at least for now. So even if it isn't perfect day one, it's not a disaster.
So let me tell you when you're going to release that to the App Store, and whether this is going to happen or not, I have no idea. But if it does happen, then you guys have like a star and a half rating because right. Some ass posts that, oh my God, they're charging money for this.
Right.
Are you going to pull the app and do a native? Or are you just going to keep releasing new versions of it under a different name?
Oh, you don't mean do a native. You mean do HTML?
HTML, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That'll be interesting. So maybe subconsciously part of me is like, we just got to do this for show content, you know? Because then I'll be able to come on here and complain about these star reviews and crazy support requests from the mobile app folks. Yeah, I mean, I can see getting some weird reviews because it's going to be a totally the kind of app where you open it and it's just a login screen. You know, they're going to have to connect to Snappy before it does anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure that there'll be at least a few people who are like, oh, this stupid thing doesn't do anything without your $10 a month service. That's crazy.
You know, I've actually written apps for a client that's exactly the same sort of structure and logic where they have a SaaS thing and or not a SaaS thing, but an on-premise thing. But it's the same thing. You pay for it, and then the app is basically just a login to that thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They have like a 5-star rating, so it's not even a thing. At least I don't think it's clear with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing I thought that the other end of that is like, as long as you're clear and you don't have people downloading it who shouldn't be downloading it, then.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even anywhere on any rankings. He just downloaded it right from the link from their website. And that's
exactly. Like, that's the thing. It's only going to be people using it who already know about Snappy and stuff. So, you know, and as long as, I mean, if it's bad, then I'm sure we'll get bad reviews. But I think, you know, it's not like something you're releasing to the general public where it's just every random person in there and all that stuff. So hopefully we don't get the full brunt of that. But you never know. That's why I kind of want to have some in-house expertise because I think it could be cool. Who knows what ideas we might come up with for things in the future, you know, when we're actually forced to think about it more versus it just being a separate, you know, an area we don't think about ever.
I have a stupid technical question.
Okay.
Ever since I started doing this VM thing that you convinced me to do.
Nope.
So I can't edit files on my local machine anymore, right? Because, well, how do you edit files? And okay, so
you got to do a shared folder,
right? So aside from that, because that sounds like a half-assed hack. Because the way it was implemented looks like it was a half-assed hack. So well, is that like the standard fare? Is the shared folder?
Like you do it, like if you're just doing one VM for everything, like I keep all my sites in the regular Apple sites folder, and they might have got rid of that, and I just remake it now. But anyway, in my, like, you know, Ian Landsman user folder, in there I have a sites folder, and I just keep all the, you know, different projects in there, and then I map the VM shared directory to that, and then, you know, so in the VM. Like in your paths and things, it'll be something. Well, like in Laravel, it figures all the paths. So I don't think you really have to do much. But if you ever did need a path, it'll be something like /media/
SF underscore something.
Yeah. So that's the way you do it. And then I just edit everything on the Mac, and you know, it just.
Yeah, I kind of did it, and it worked after a long number of tries.
It's a little funky.
on OS X. I couldn't get it to work on Windows. Same exact VM, same exact Ubuntu, same exact VirtualBox, and I just couldn't get the shared folders to work on Windows. So I just have an awful setup right now where like everything is on my Mac. Shared folder being served, everything that's on my Mac is being served off of this Ubuntu VM that's running on my Mac. And when I need to edit something on my Windows machine, there's a shared folder, there's a shared drive between the Windows and the Mac that I'm editing files on my Mac from my Windows, but right. Sublime Text can't search it because the ASPSF, whatever that mounting networking thing is, technology is called, it's not fast enough that you could index the entire directory. So if I need to search it, I need to go back to my Mac and do a project search, and then I edit at my Windows machine. It's an embarrassment is what it is.
First of all, I still don't understand why you're editing on the Mac and on Windows. Like, why don't you just pick one and then run with it?
Because the way I work is like I work in the office. In the office, the big monitor is the Windows monitor because I'm a gamer and I'm not going to keep switching the stuff around. So the 30-inch monitor is the Windows machine because I play games on it. So the 30-inch monitor is the Windows machine. I write a lot of code on it. So that means I have to do code on my Windows machine. But everything lives on the Mac.
The MacBook can push the big monitor.
The MacBook Air.
Oh, you're on an Air.
Has trouble. Yeah. Because I have three monitors, so there's a forest of wires here, and they're all responsible for driving monitors.
Well, you got to get that new Mac Pro then, and that's when you're sitting there.
I have no money.
Mac Pro. You got to make money for the Mac Pro. Credit card time. You got to go to Atlantic City and earn a few bucks.
Yeah. Maybe when I go to MicroConf.
Oh my goodness. Well, you got to get your development. Listen, your tools, it's like you can't be a blacksmith without a hammer and, you know, fire.
No, my machines are optimized up to wazoo. I'm just not happy with the current sharing. And it's only because everything has to go through a VM. I mean, if I could get the VM working on my Windows and I have two VMs, that's a pain in the ass in itself, but at least I'll be able to have local instead of all this Windows OS X sharing.
Well, I'm sure it works on Windows. So you obviously just need to fix it up. I mean, it definitely works. I mean, it's possible to do a shared directory on Windows.
Yeah, it's not like you go and you go to file and you go to do shared directory and boom, it works. It's like you have to go and dig up articles from like 2001 on like Ubuntu setting up shared folders. You have to edit files. You've never seen it. 20 years of using Unix, I've never seen these files. And apparently they're on the world in Unix.
Well, you know what you got to do too? You know what might be worth your time is spend a little bit of money. I'm not a big fan of this VirtualBox. I mean, that's what I use. That's all these, you know, that's the hotness these days in the geek circle because it's free and God forbid anybody pay for software. So
I tried Fusion, it doesn't work.
Yeah, but that's not on Mac. I mean, on Windows is your problem, right? Is there a Windows version of Fusion?
I don't know.
No, there's no Windows version.
What's on Windows?
You got by like the VM, you know, whatever, VMware, like the real VMware thing. That's the Windows thing. Or there's probably some other one. Parallels. I think Parallels might have a Windows
Parallels
version.
Is only Mac thing.
We'll find one. There has to be a real one for Windows. And I bet you if you get the real one for Windows, that it'll work fine.
Man, what a pile of bullshit hacks our job is. I mean, I tweeted this the other day that imagine going back in time and telling programmers, C++ programmers in like the early 90s, that in the future, instead of having the compiler check our shit for us, we're just going to keep the Chrome console open all day.
Right.
to make sure nothing crashes, nothing, JavaScript is not throwing exceptions left and right. It's just an embarrassment. We have programming languages that are like the most popular programming languages right now, the most popular technologies, stranded together with like chewing gum and duct tape. And we have development environments hanging together with a whole bunch of like shared folders and VMs. It's just like a mess, man. I mean, I went to work. I had a Solaris box that kicked ass. I had 16 terminals open, tiled, and I had VI open in each one. And I wrote highly optimized trading systems that made billions of dollars a year. That was like solid. And now it's like everything is just noodles. Everything is noodles, man. Nothing's, there's no, it just feels like there's no foundation of anything. Everything's just strapped together, like hacked together.
I told you right now, the name of this episode is 16 Terminals Tiled. That's it. I already got the title.
Whatever. How do I wind up feeling sleepy and half drunk and wind up going into rants in the middle of the night?
It is all horrible. See, I do think that's where some – they're trying to fix it around the edges with things like the CoffeeScript. I mean, if you write your JavaScript in CoffeeScript, then it is compiled. And so the compiler does check it. And also, I mean, it's even – and it builds a bunch of stuff for you too, so that you don't have to like write your curly braces and crap. So, in some ways, that's part of the upside of some of these things like CoffeeScript, is that it brings you a little bit back to that world. But it does add a whole bunch more complexity, and it means you have this other new set of tools you need to do the compilation, and they're all kind of funky and require the weird JSON-based configuration files because nothing should have an interface, of course. And so that's all kind of weird. Yeah, it's all crap. It's horrible. It's like you could do more with less people, but at the same time, you still need more time or people than it seems like you should at this point because everything's so complicated.
The application level stuff is getting more complex, and you could get prettier, more complicated, more elaborate things running. But like, the foundational system stuff, even application level development tools don't seem to be catching up. Like, there's new versions of the same crap doesn't work because, like, it's foundationally incorrect for the kind of work we're doing.
Well, did you ever see that? There was some guy, I think he put it on like Kickstarter. He's trying to do this new IDE where it kind of ties things in together more and connects the code up together. I forget what it's called. It looked kind of cool. It's called Dashboard or something. I don't know what it's called. I'll dig it up for the show notes. It was, I don't know if you ever built it though. I don't think it's out yet for sure. But yeah, it does feel like the kind of core tools are.
Because I'm basically aside from the JavaScript stuff and JavaScript inside Chrome running as a console type of a thing, it's still JavaScript. But aside from like that top level stuff, everything I'm using now, I used in the early 90s.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same foundational programming crap, same editor, same, essentially same operating system, same networking technologies, like same XML crap. I mean, now it's JSON, but it's still the same. There's the same thought behind all of this stuff, except the complexity is exploding, but the tool set is not catching up with anything because the work that's being done is on the wrong end of this tool set. I mean, it should be from the bottom up. The whole thing needs to be kind of rethought.
I'm not the man to do it.
I'm not. I have no idea what the solution is. I'm just complaining. Oh well, whatever.
So we gotta get this fixed for you.
Fixed what?
You gotta fix up your environment. You can't do anything else until you fix up your environment. So make
that.
No,
it's fine. It's fine. It's no big deal. Yeah,
but that little things that irk you, you know, then you're not operating at peak efficiency.
All right, if you're gonna go there, you know, stop the boy from crying every 5 minutes, and let me work for more than 50 minute stretches, and we'll start from there. Get the chunks of efficiency in place, and then we'll worry about whether I'm typing 100 words a minute or 98 words a minute.
You gotta go get out of your house.
I was actually saying yesterday to my wife, even though we don't have any money, I'm just saying, I thought it was going to get easier the older he gets because he's not going to need my attention as much, so I could get out of the office less and work a little bit more. But as it turns out, yesterday he figured out how to stand on his little baby chair, climb on a bigger chair, and open the door to my office. So now it looks like I'm going to actually need to get an office.
They want more attention. Then they know they want attention, whereas when they're babies, they just kind of are like, you know, if they happen across you, you know, they'll pull on your leg or whatever. But now when they get bigger, then if they know where you are, they're coming for you.
Right. So essentially between now and when he's starts going to school, so the next 5 years or something like that, I'm going to get no work done. Because he's capable of dragging me out of wherever I am.
But that's why you got to get out of your house.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. So now
you got to get like a co-working space.
There's nothing like that. This is suburbia.
Go to Starbucks or something.
We had this conversation last time. I feel like like I'm wasting everybody's time working at a Starbucks. I feel like a mooch.
Oh, jeez. Buy 10 coffees. Buy that big box of coffee. You just sit there with it.
Got to figure something out. I actually wouldn't mind a co-working space.
You're not that far from New York.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to drive into New York. Part of the worst thing of teaching that class, where I taught Hunter as an adjunct for a semester.
Yeah.
Earlier, whenever it was, was driving to Manhattan every twice a week.
Yeah, it's kind of rough, I guess. It's where you are,
worst commute. It's really like it's the worst thing. Long Island to the city. Ugh. Whatever. What else you got going on up there in the Userscape world? You guys having a holiday? Because you got enough people now, you could have a holiday party.
Holiday party? Nah, probably not. Scrooge. Everybody's all over the place. Like, you know, it's the virtual holiday parties.
Everybody's festive. Have a Festivus. Festivus for everybody. You're Seinfeld people. You got to do Festivus celebrations.
We could do something like that, I guess.
Dance around a pole.
Everybody has to have their own pole. That's the other problem. I'm shipping everybody poles. Nah, I don't know. There's lots of stuff going on. Some stuff's in the works. I can't really get into it deep yet. Maybe next week we'll have some more news to report. We'll see. What else? So I do have something that I could talk about. We've been so Jamie does, you know, pretty much the back office stuff at this point, and like just managing the business and all the government regulations and just junk and benefits and all that stuff. So HR. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get organized on our healthcare stuff because all this stuff's changing and you have to switch plans, and then you read all this stuff and it's going to go up, you know, a bajillion percent. So, you know, she's been beating on people to try to get this straight. And the whole thing's a disaster. It's like, you don't know, like, are you going to like, and then everybody's like, you've got to let people, you know, just use the Obamacare thing, but then that thing doesn't work. So that's not really a solution. And I don't feel like that's a great solution anyway, because we have a pretty good plan and we just pay 100% of it. And so if you send people off to the thing, it's how do you compensate them for that? You know, it's not easy to do that because they'd have to use after tax dollars. And so you'd have to give them more money to compensate for taxes. And, you know, so that gets kind of crazy if you want to actually provide that as like a true benefit where you still pay for that. It's not really practical. So we finally got plans from the insurance company and they look actually not too bad. Like we might actually save a little money. So I don't know. Now Jamie's digging in to find out why that could possibly be. And that something
you're so surprised with the prospect of actually not getting screwed that you're right. Thinking something's wrong.
But yeah, the only thing I could figure really is that we were getting so incredibly screwed with our last deal that now they don't even have the incredible screw you plan anymore. So we're now into a more normal tier. But it's so tricky. You would think that our little company of a few people would not be an edge case in terms of people working in multiple states, but it is. Like everybody we deal with has no idea how to deal with a company that has employees in multiple states, and certainly not with a majority of employees outside of the main state. Like that just sends everything into a total tailspin. So we have to like be very careful with that too. So she's checking to make sure, you know, that the person in North Carolina can get it, in Arkansas and Tennessee, that actually this plan all works everywhere. And, you know, you got to double and triple check these things because nobody really knows. It's because nobody deals with people who have employees in multiple states, apparently. So it's complicated. So that's been a big thing we've been on the last couple of weeks, is trying to get that all straightened out. Just crazy.
You always feel like an edge case, even with normal stuff. Just being a small business, like 50 billion small businesses in America, driving force of the entire economy, call any bureaucratic agency, and they're like, what do you mean you make less than $100 million a year? We don't have a checkbox for that.
Yeah, it's crazy. What do you think about this healthcare.gov thing? What's your take?
I don't know. I haven't visited it. I'm like, my wife's taking care of it, and I'm perfectly happy being blissfully ignorant.
Are you guys switching to it, or?
I have no idea. She tells me to write a check, and I'll write a check, and if not, I don't. That's it. I refuse to talk about or think about or be talked to about insurance or taxes. It's enough that I have to do marketing. That's my limit. Non-coding work.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, marketing. I'm gearing up on marketing. I'm gearing up for like next year. I'm trying to gear up to have Snap in a whole bunch of places. But we're gonna do some paid podcast ads. And then we're gonna do like have the mailing list and stuff. I don't know. I'm trying to get some different angles on different things we could do. But it's so hard. Like, I feel like there's so many little companies now, and everybody's all freaking out about it. In the old days, people weren't so aggressive with the marketing. There's just a different tone to it. Now it's like everybody's trying to squeeze into every little nook and cranny, and you don't want to be like that because it just feels sleazy. But
it's hard.
Like, there's no room to breathe out there. You know,
Your industry, it's kind of like you somehow got, when you started out with help desk software, it was horizontal without the bad aspects of horizontal, because it was kind of like horizontal, like you could hit every business, but you didn't suffer from like, oh, I made a word processor type of issues. Right. But now with so much help desk competition, you guys are horizontal still, but now you're suffering from like, how do we reach people issues? Because now you're getting hit with the bad parts of being horizontal, because there's a lot of competition there. Yeah, I have no idea how tons. I mean, at least I know like who my, at least my target is not that wide that I can't like focus on the marketing. But you guys are like you could throw a dart at a phone book, and they could use a help desk software,
right?
Yeah, and that's bad. That's not good, because like you have no idea where to spread the effort.
It is hard to kind of dial it in. That's one of the advantages, I think, of the two products, is that it does make it, since they can be dialed in a little bit more on their specific zones. Especially now, I feel like we've got Snappy really dialed in on the kind of a simpler, small team kind of thing. So, you know, freelancers and startups and just small groups. Like, it's at least then it's not just everybody everywhere, which is kind of the real market of in theory, right? So, and then HelpSpot's just going to get pushed more into enterprise-y world and on-premise, where there's not, you know, so much competition actually as there was. So that part's kind of good, but yeah, it's getting focused on what to do. And yeah, there's tons of competition on the Snappy end in terms of these small companies and new companies. All those guys are, you know, venture backed, or most of them are. So they really have to get to this crazy critical mass that I don't have to worry about. Like, as long as we get to profitableness, then it's fine. We don't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be $100 million business. So yeah, it's a little bit different tactics there too, but
it's still growing, still good with Snappy from.
Yeah. So we made a change. We changed the UI. I think we might talk about that a little bit last week, but we also got implemented the taking credit cards up front, which I love it. It's great. Highly recommended. We still have a free trial. Mm-hmm. So like we get their credit card and then they're on a free trial, but yeah, it definitely hasn't dissuaded. I mean, there's less trials overall, but now all of them are obvious high quality trials versus, you know, mostly kind of weird, random people looking trials. And it hasn't, you know, it's not like we threw up this wall and nobody is willing to do that. So that's been really good.
How are you guys getting the initial traffic? You're doing some paid ad things, or?
No, we're not doing anything like that right now. So right now we're not really even doing anything with Snappy, but there's just, you know, there are people using it, so people are talking about it, and it's got links from you know, a lot of places from our kind of initial push, which was really even before we launched. Mm-hmm. So that's still kind of going. And but there's not, you know, we don't, right now there's no paid ads other than support ops. We have kind of a standing ad on there. And I think that's the only, I think that's the only ad we have right now. So yeah, there's, we're not really doing anything marketing wise right now, which is intentional just because we're making these big changes. So I want to get through all that, and we're redoing the FAQ, how the FAQ system works, to be a little bit more powerful and also just a better interface for it. And once that's done, it's going to be in a really good place. So I'm that's where I feel like, all right, we're going to be really ready to start pushing a lot of people. Oh, and then site, like I'm working on the new website. So the new website's 70% done. So once that's, once the new website's done, the FAQs are updated. I feel like everything's really solid and good with it now. So we'll be able to, I feel like we'll be ready to start pushing it. But you know, then we're going to hit the holidays and stuff here. So I'm not going to really start doing anything, definitely nothing paid or anything like that until after that. And even, I mean, paid is always, you know, it's a little bit tricky. I mean, the podcast advertising and stuff we're going to do is paid. I would like to do a little bit of stuff with AdWords just because Andy Bryce there has me. He, you know, he's got this little tool he's working on. It does some cool stuff and helps you with it. And I don't know, I've been just thinking about it a little bit more, but I need some more time to really delve into that because the Google stuff's just crazy. So I don't know. We'll
see. Did you do the consulting thing with Andy?
No, I haven't done a consulting thing with Andy. It would be wasted. Like I wouldn't be. I know I'm not. I don't have the time yet to devote to actually taking care of the campaigns. You know,
I gotta figure out. See, that's the problem. It's not like I have to figure out what to do. I'm at a stage where I sit down. I have to figure out where the correct source is for reading about what to do. Because I don't trust like half of it. Like you can't just Google and say, all right, SEO tactics, because I don't trust any of those things. So you kind of have to like pick and choose at least the people you choose. So you go like Rob Walling and you go to Patrick McKenzie and Andy Bryce and whoever, and you have to try to find at least the sources that you know personally, and then hopefully they've written an article at some point about the stuff you're looking for, and then hopefully that article is not like 3 years old. Yeah. So it's kind of hard to even find out like where to start learning from, you know, about like the technical stuff. Because you go into AdWords and you're going to get screwed. And you know you're going to get screwed, but you don't know where to learn how not to get screwed.
Yeah, and just the paying for advertising is tricky, especially again with the SaaS. So it's not going to pay for itself. Like you have to pay for this customer and then you're not going to get paid back on what it costs you to acquire that customer, you know, for a while. And then, you know, after that point, you know, that's profit and that's good. But, you know, you have to have a bankroll essentially, right? To like go into that and be like, all right, we're going to drop this money. And over the next 2 years, if we get a certain number of customers, then we'll make our money back. Which is kind of, you know, I mean, it's okay if you can do that, but it is, I mean, even if you can, it's kind of nerve wracking. So I don't know. I definitely want to explore more free stuff. I mean, Rob has, you know, his drip thing with email marketing. I definitely think email marketing is something, again, like we talked about a little bit last week, that I want to do more with because it feels more direct and something that's, you know, low cost. And
you got to have content for drip though, right? Because they sort of take your blog posts and make courses out of it or something.
Right. Like, you know, like a 3 or 4 or 4 or 5 kind of emails in a row that teach people something. And then, you know, at the end of that, you're kind of asking for, you know, their business at, you know, based on what you've taught them, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, that sounds kind of interesting. I mean, I also think even just newsletters in general, like you should do a newsletter on the mobile stuff. Like, why not? Like, you know, a lot of mobile people, and it doesn't have to be, see, I don't think it has to be so direct about Uber Deck or about push notifications or anything like that. It can be more general. And then, you know, even if those people aren't directly people who are going to be customers, you know, they tweet about you or they talk about you and things like that. So, you know, I think that could have some ancillary benefits there.
I hate writing though.
Yeah, I know, it's hard.
I'm actually, it's amazing that I didn't think like newsletters, I mean, I knew they kind of made a comeback or whatever, but I was actually surprised how much I enjoy getting Rachel Andrews' newsletter.
Yeah, hers is really good.
It's pretty, I mean, it's not like elaborate or anything special. I mean, it's just like sort of like a blog post that arrives by email, but there's something about like either the way she forms it or the way it's structured or the tone of the voice, the way it reads. Yeah. But like there's something about it that's just so almost like a respite, like you take it in like with a cup of coffee in the morning, and it's like a relaxing type of a thing, which is like weird. It's like a newsletter, you know. It's the sort of thing you're supposed to mark as spam and delete, but that stuff arrives and it's actually interesting to read.
Well, that's what's great about it, right, is that it's so like if you subscribe to a newsletter you actually want to read it. It's just we're so trained that there's no such thing as a newsletter you want to read, right? But I feel like that's, yeah, exactly like you described, like that's what I want to do with mine, as I've already not written one in 3 weeks because I've had no time, but like that same kind of vibe she has, where it's like a blog post and an email, like that kind of thing. Instead of writing a blog post, you have this newsletter, and it has that personal touch to it. Whereas you kind of think of a newsletter as something the marketing guy did, and it's five, you know, summaries of blog posts and just links those blog posts, and it's generic and horrible. But if you actually put the content in the newsletter and give it some personality, then it becomes something you want to read. So, and there is this special relationship with email too that I think is a little bit hard to quantify, but you know, there's something different about email still. You know, email still has that touch of a personal letter that all these other things don't have, whether it's your RSS reader or Twitter, or Facebook, or whatever. When something arrives to you in email, there's still just that personal nature to it that I think, you know, is interesting, and that isn't yet replicated really in any of these other millions of forms of communication we have.
Yeah, the inbox is somehow, it feels like the real version of those. You know, when in the late 90s when portals were big, like web portals like Yahoo and Alta Vista and whatever, Lycos, they all tried to get you to use their like startup page in the browser, that you could put all your favorite things in that startup page, and that's like your base of foundation. Like when you start browsing, that's your fallback of that page. That's what the inbox is. Like the inbox is like your bat cave.
Right.
It's like when you have a lapse and you don't know what to do next, your immediate jump is right to the inbox. Because that's your little hole. Right. And the RSS reader is something you go out explicitly to look for. And all the websites is something you go out explicitly to look for. But the inbox is like something you fall back into. And that's why I think it feels like a sort of like your own little nook, you know? So anything arriving in there is sort of like already something you have complete control over.
Yeah. And you get to time shift it too. So it has like a lot of those same advantages. Yeah, and now that HTML emails have gotten better and stuff, and you know, you can add a little more personality to them. It's not all just, you know, text and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. There's something there. I kind of wish I had been building my mailing list like 9 years ago instead of like a month ago. But so I still want to work. That's kind of, you know, going to be a big thing, I think, going forward too. Because it's also people you can bounce ideas off of. It becomes like this community that you can work with in other ways besides just selling stuff too, right? Like they can, you know, do whether it's just straight, I have a question, and now you have this kind of community of people, which you know, I've used blogs that way too in the past. And you know, they can write you back in this private manner. So I've already had a couple of interesting back and forths with people. Yeah, I know. I'm definitely kind of liking that. The time to write is the killer part, but just got to make time to do it.
How do you structure all that stuff? I mean, we should probably end, but like, I remember when I started consulting a few years ago, and I kind of had clients who are interested from the Anterra side, so they didn't know anything about me, and they go through the Anterra site, and Anterra has like a little consulting bit there. Mm-hmm. And then you have people who are who know you, so they go in from your blog and they kind of approach you that way. And I remember back in the day, really being torn as to how do you, if you're gonna go full blown consulting, how do you where do you focus the effort? Are you gonna present yourself as the company, or are you gonna present yourself as the individual, you know, mercenary, or are you gonna somehow split the efforts between the two and do something weird with the newsletter stuff and that sort of like content build up type of thing? I find myself in the same situation. Do you have UberDeck as building yourself as an authority and having content for mobile developers, or do you do it on the, you know, Andre's personal blog thing, which has pictures of Ethan being 3 months old? Right. Do you build that thing now up to something where Andre kind of knows maybe a little bit about mobile stuff? So it's kind of like I think it's a personality trait where you kind of want to categorize everything into its own little neat bucket. But I'm always like torn in these sort of situations as to being a one person company. Essentially, you're just one person, but not really sure. I mean, if you ask Ruben Gomez about this, for example, from BidSketch, he will tell you that he will not write anything under like his own name. He would much rather have, even when he has like guest. I mean, I heard about this on Chris Hawking's Chasing Product podcast when right. Ruben was on. He said he'd prefer guest posts right under their own names, and he will build the company because he wants to keep himself out of it. Not because right. he's shy or whatever, but because he wants the company to have value.
Yeah.
So, but then yeah, at the same time, when he goes on Chris's podcast and when we do a podcast, it's not the companies that are being represented here. It's us that are putting our shit in the line. So it's kind of yeah. tough to see where do you put the effort into the individual or into the company.
Yeah, I've kind of come back around. I guess you kind of have to do both, right? But there is, I do feel like things have swung around a little bit more to the individual, where like building up your own individual kind of brand is some ways is makes it easier to do some of these newfangled things, like not that a newsletter is newfangled, I guess, but what's kind of currently trendy, I guess, because an email from a person that is a newsletter gives you that personal vibe that you like about Rachel's, right? But if that was from, you know, the company, like that then takes on a whole different vibe. Like automatically the person reading it is in the what are they trying to sell me mode. Like I see this is from Userscape, what are they trying to sell me? Whereas when it's from Ian, you know, oh, I know Ian and what's he got to say. So I do think there's a lot of value in that personal relationship that's very hard to have when the company is the focus of that. So I don't know, I've been kind of doing both essentially. Like we have this big Snap emailing list with like 4,000 people on it, but it's, you know, people sign up for it as a snappy thing. So, which also is kind of tricky. Like, do I just send people updates on Snappy? Like that's presumably kind of what it's for, but that's kind of boring, you know? So we added this and we did that and okay, whatever. So I'm still trying to figure out the best way to utilize that and to give people something useful over there. And then, you know, my much smaller personal list, which, you know, is growing slowly, and I wish I'd been building up forever, which I haven't been. But, yeah, I don't know. You know, the other thing too, well, here's a developer thing, is that this is so cliche, but so I've been doing, you know, a couple weeks, done this newsletter, whatever. And I swear to you, I have to. It's in my blood. I must build a superior tool for managing these newsletters because they're just not right. Like, I mean, I love Campaign Monitor, but it's, you know, it's geared. It's not for these personal newsletters exactly. Like, there's a couple things I don't like about it. Like, they give you the web version of the newsletter, but there's no way to like see past versions of the newsletter, and there's no way for people to subscribe from there. So I feel like that's a big negative. Like if you go to Rachel's, she's using MailChimp, and MailChimp does let you do that. So when you click through to the web version of hers, like you could read her past ones and you can subscribe. So I feel like if it gets emailed around or things, or post on Twitter or whatever, you know, then there's a way for somebody to subscribe instead of, you know, with mine, there's, you can't see the history, you can't subscribe, whatever. So that's a negative. But then, so I looked at MailChimp, but again, that has like some weird stuff and it's geared toward mass sending of these huge things. So that was annoying. Then I was like a tiny letter, which is kind of cool. I do kind of like that, but it has some other limitations. I don't know. Like, so I already have a, I have like a whole page of the spec of how we should build our own.
You're bored. You're bored. We talked about this last episode. SaaS is too boring for you.
It could be, but it's not even that. It's that when you're in something, you see the problems with these other solutions. You're like, oh, I know. I have like 10 ideas of how this would be better to build a tool that was focused on this specific area.
Yeah, but we all have that list. My list is 10,000 apps long. You're going to wind up – you're going to build an Antera for yourself where you just release stuff and release stuff and release stuff and it doesn't go anywhere.
I even bought a domain, two domains.
Of course you did. That's step one.
Oh, man. And I got the .io domain. So that was like $49. So this is a real problem, or $59 or something. I don't know.
I'm proud of myself. This year, I've let three domains expire.
Whoa, that's good.
Yeah,
I let a couple.
First step is admitting you have a problem.
Yeah, it's hard to let them go. I have like 20 locked up in Yahoo domains, which is the most impossible thing to transfer or use. Like, it literally doesn't run. It must be on one server someplace buried. It's non-functional much of the time. Like, you go there and literally it's 20 seconds for a page to load. Which I guess is just their strategy to keep you from moving.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Put the account cancellation server on like some 486 Dell laptop that's sitting in the closet.
That's really what it's on. That's what it's on. It's unbearable. So I've gone there 15 times to move all my domains, and it's impossible. It like can't be done. So like, I have moved a couple here where like all day in the background I'm waiting for screens to load, and as I see it's loaded, I'll do the next step and wait for it to load. But man, it's horrible.
There's gonna be a startup somewhere whose entire pivot point or whatever is canceling people's accounts.
Yeah, I've considered, you know, that it's that hover.com. They have a concierge service in theory where they'll move them for you. So I was considering doing that, at least to get the Yahoo ones to somewhere that I could deal with them and then leave them on Hover, you know, for a year and then see if I like Hover. I mean, Hover is more expensive than all the other ones, but they do have this service, which is kind of handy. So I don't know.
All right. We're over an hour, I think.
Yeah. We're just rambling wrap it now. Up.
You want to wrap it up?
All right. I'll wrap it up.
Okay.
This is my week. My week to intro and outro. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. You can catch us at bootstrap.fm, as you probably know, up on iTunes. We had more ratings lately.
Everybody, I got to go check them out. I like the iTunes ratings because they make fun of me.
Well, it's a rating too, where it's on the, you know, Apple world, but it's not a negative thing. So.
Yeah, it's true. It's the only time where my apps don't get 1-star ratings is when I release the podcasts that are free, where I complain about the other stuff.
We're 5 stars up there, so that's great. So obviously, thank you to everybody who's done that.
Oh, Mark Lanigan.
Go do that. That would be great. And that's it. Well, the show notes up on bootstrap.fm. Definitely go check out discuss.bootstrap.fm if you haven't been over there or not in a while. That our little forum that's associated with the podcast, which tons of great stuff on there.
Party all the time. Party all the time. Party. Sorry, go ahead.